So here I am. I'm happy to see you all. I have a few things to comment from emails. I do want to, before we begin, that here in Ojai we've been experiencing some extremely high temperatures for a week now, and it is often the case that in situations like this we lose power sometimes. So far that hasn't happened. And if it does, of course, what will happen from your end is that we'll just disappear. And we may be back soon or we may not be back at all. But if we disappear, you'll know it's because the power's out. And if you hang around for a while, we might be back. I just wanted to alert you to that. I also want to, just before I begin, just to put things in context. I just want to point out to you that for me, and in this work that Carl and I are doing, and for me, it is the work, the suffering, the loss of suffering, the life, it is all entirely. Everything that I have to say, everything that I offer to you, everything that I ask you to do, everything that I suggest to you, whether with whatever skill I manage to do these things, is all about identity. There is nothing else whatsoever that is of any usefulness in the natural desire to be alive and free and in love with life. There's nothing else that matters apart from identity. There's nothing else that gets in the way. There's no other problem. There's no other cause of suffering. And the resolution of this issue of identity, infallibly, without question, resolves everything else. It doesn't mean that it changes the personality or the way the life looks and so forth into something that's more conducive to anything or more acceptable to you or to me or to anybody else. But when the issue of identity is settled once for all, everything else is settled. And things change as they will. They don't change when they don't change. We are free to pursue whatever practices, therapies, or religious beliefs, or anything else that seems like it's useful in this life. But when the issue of identity is settled, there's no misery around any of it. There's no neediness around any of it. There's no suffering around any of it. So when you hear me speak to you, I want you to know that although I am unevenly skillful at doing this, I want you to know that any time I speak to you and any time I speak about anything at all, I am speaking from the viewpoint that it is the issue of identity that must be settled first before anything else. And everything else in this realm, in this format, in this work, everything else is beside the point. It doesn't mean that it's beside the point in the life. It doesn't mean that it's beside the point in the work that you do, or in the way you relate to your family, or in the way you relate to yourself, or in the way you relate to the world. It doesn't mean it's beside the point in all of that. But just here, in this meeting, in this time that we spend together, in this work that Carla and I are called to do, the issue of identity comes first, must be settled. And the vichara, the practice of self-inquiry, the practice of seeking self, settles it. So, just so you know, that's where I'm coming from. Now I've got a couple of emails that I'm going to read parts of and speak to you about them. I don't know whether the writers of the emails are present or not. I've let them know that I'm going to be talking about it, and if they're not present, I will send them a link to the recording when it's up. Dear John, the further this inquiry goes, the more I see there is somehow no mind. There are just thoughts that give the impression of mind. This I already knew. But now my question, this sensation of me, of I, stays untouched. It is independent of thought or content. The knowing, the thoughts, rest, but the emotional attachment to the knowing somehow disappears. And this is astonishing. I am not so much speaking about it as love or peace. It is more stunning, like an emotional separation from knowledge. And this gives freedom. Actually, this is freedom. And about this me, I can say nothing. It is a sensation coming out of a well of not knowing. But this not knowing is not pain. It's just a miracle. One could say God if this word wouldn't be so spoiled with belief. Now my question. I can now stand somehow directly at the very point I arises, which gives very much peace. Is there a view possible into this unknown well of I? First of all, I just want to say that what this guy says about the stunning discovery of the loss of an emotional attachment to knowledge, which I take it to mean to thought, all thought, not just knowledge thought, but all thought, the loss of an emotional attachment to that is precisely the loss of the conviction that you are at stake in the life. And then, of course, the knowing, the not knowing, the thoughts, the opinions, the activities, the craziness, the clarity, all of that then is just a delightful show, a delightful play of God knows what, thought, whatever that is. And surely it is true that mind is thought. There's nothing to it but thought. Mind is an inference itself based on the appearance of thought within it. The freedom from attachment to thought is something that in spiritual circles and in spiritual teachings is much desired and much spoken about as the goal of all desiring, this end of the emotional attachment to thought. But we already know that there's nothing we can do within thought to bring about this vanishing of the emotional attachment to thought. It is, as this person realizes, the vichara, the exposure of the apparatus that is fueled by the conviction that we are at stake in this life, to the light of reality that brings about this end of suffering, this snuffing out of misery. And as to the view possible into this unknown well of I, well, you see, you must see, if you reflect upon this for a moment, you must see that the whole show, the whole manifestation and unmanifested well of not knowing, the whole show is precisely the view into the well of not knowing, the well of the source of I, the well of eternal awareness, the well of you, of you. It's all you. Here's another one. Hi, John. I wanted to write to you about some strange things that are taking place in my life lately. First of all, I don't seem to want much lately. for someone who used to be consumed by all-out wanting, yearning, longing, striving, etc., to the point of it being all-consuming and even addictive, this is very strange. I guess I have the thought there's something wrong, but I just go inside with this question into the being and know it isn't true. It's like there's nothing to do, mixed in with residual thoughts and fears along the lines of there's something wrong and so on, over and over again. I don't do much besides go to work and take care of the basics of living. I feel like I should be doing more. I should be doing something with my life. I should have goals and want things and so forth, but I don't really. I don't seem to have any ambition. Whatever it is I wanted, which was primarily and overwhelmingly a love relationship with someone, I have not the slightest bit of interest in. I'm still hung up on the past to a degree and feel some pretty strong hatred toward a certain person at times, which I secretly quite enjoy, which makes me completely unspiritual, to my tremendous relief. I don't seem to want much beyond bare basics. I don't have many worries. I'm not interested in socializing or meeting new people and doing things, and I guess this last bit is the area of most concern. Did you go through a phase like this? I have to say that I have, in this life, I have never had much interest in socializing, so I can't see any time when that has changed. There certainly were times in life, I think, that I can recall when I thought that socializing was something I ought to want to do, and that I was missing out on something by not participating in all the social activities that we invent and play at. But I never really cared for that. So I don't think there's any difference. I think all of these things relating to the, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with socializing, all these things relating to the way the personality operates in the world and the life are, as Ramana was so fond of saying, according to the predispositions of the individual. Just about every question about why or why not you are or are not doing or wanting or not wanting or seeking or not seeking can be answered with that one assertion. This is all according to the predispositions of the individual, by which I mean that these persons, these personalities, this apparatus of personal expression and personal consciousness is formed. It doesn't form itself. It is formed in response to the forces that surround it, the context in which it appears. And as the context shifts and changes and so forth, and the context includes everything. It includes the temperature and the way the guy across the street looked at you and the way your mother treated you when you were an infant and your opinions about those things and your resistances to or reactions to or acceptance of these things. That whole, the whole world in which the personality and personal consciousness forms personality and personal consciousness and consists of the predispositions of the individual or gives rise to the predispositions of the individual. So these questions that pertain to the particular way in which the individual personal apparatus changes or doesn't changes, evolves or doesn't evolve, wants or doesn't want, and so forth, are unanswerable. It just, the personal consciousness just is in a constant state of flux, a constant state of development and evolution. Based on the effect of the forces that surround it. So, the whole question is, kind of unanswerable. It's according to the predispositions of the individual. You will see as you go along that you will just notice the way the life is changing. The way life has always been changing. Most of the time in our lives, because we are so fearful about the life and fearful about the things it does and the things it thinks and so forth, most of the time we are a little freaked out about the fact that the shape of my personality is constantly in flux and constantly changing. So our reaction is a reaction, denial or trying to hold it or whatever. When that conviction that I am at stake here, that I need to pay close attention to what's happening here, when that's snuffed out, then you just notice the way it changes. And who knows, maybe tomorrow you'll find yourself going out to a bar and to a sports bar and watching whatever sport is popular wherever you are and having a good time drinking beer. I wouldn't worry about any of it. Also, the thing about there's something wrong and going inside with the question, and knowing it isn't true, and I'm not trying to quibble with you about this, but I just want to point out that the thought there's something wrong is neither true or untrue. It's a thought. The emotional attachment to that thought, which arises because of this inferential conviction that I'm trapped in this life, there's nothing to me but this life, the emotional attachment to the thought comes and goes, and in the process of the vichara, just disappears altogether. And then it is, as you say, there's just these thoughts. There's something wrong, I should be doing this, I shouldn't be doing that. The thoughts are neither true nor false. They're just thoughts passing through, just a part of the face of the person, the shape of the life. The email goes on, I'm not seeking anymore, is what it seems like, and I feel a bit adrift. I'm not depressed, and I certainly have been. I certainly know what that feels like. Life is pretty ordinary and mundane and satisfying, really. It's just this nagging feeling that I should be doing more. Life is ordinary and mundane, and life is perfectly satisfying, and the nagging feeling is just a feeling. It's not a nagging feeling, and it's just a thought that I should be doing more. And it is, you are entirely free to follow that thought, to grip onto that thought, to try to do more, which is what you have done all your life. And you're also entirely free just to watch it as it comes and goes. The vichara has freed you of the need to determine what is the right response to that thought, you see. Goes on, it's kind of funny, really. I just don't quite know what to do with myself. It's pretty peaceful. People keep saying to me, you should get out more, socialize, meet people. I have no interest in this. I was thinking today, so much of my energy and attention has been directed inwards over the last few years. It's like I don't need that anymore. I enjoy my own company and the peace. I don't need the buzz. Actually, the thought of that repels me. Yes, that's right. That's right. Hallelujah. So am I going to end up a turnip? Just a vegetable sitting on a couch? And I do spend a lot of time sitting around. It wouldn't be so bad, really, just this nagging feeling that I'm failing at life. Excuse me. I'm missing out on stuff. I should be like one of those happy, shiny, successful, overdosing on life, high-achieving folk I once strove toward and craved. It's also really obvious to me that I'm always here, There's nothing abstract or spiritual or anything about it at all. There's nothing to write home about at all. Am I missing the point, John? It's lovely. It's peaceful. And I'm kind of bemused and baffled, left scratching my head. There's no ecstasy or anything at all, really. Am I missing the point? Well, I don't know. What is the point, I guess, would be how you would know if you're missing the point. The point of life is life, really. And you see that. The point of life is life. The purpose of life is life. These human lives are, just as they are, what is actually meant by the term self-realization. They are self, which is you, which has no shape, no movement, no form, which is itself a well of not knowing. There is self, which is you, and there is the life, which is the manifestation of you, which is the arising of manifest projection of self. That's what self-realization is. That's exactly what self-realization is. And this life is, just as it is the perfect realization of infinite, eternal awareness. There's nothing that can be done about it. There's nothing that can be done to... Well, there's just nothing that can be done. You may end up a turnip. Who knows? You may end up a... what is it you said here? Shiny, successful, overdosing on life, high-achieving folk. Who knows? Depends on what's going on when the life stops. That's what you end up. In the meantime, enjoy yourself. That's it. Enjoy yourself. The vichara will never cease. It has actually never started. It is actually the nature of you, is this vichara. And when it becomes conscious, when it becomes intentional, it is it is what snuffs out all of the source of misery and suffering. Enjoy yourself, turnip or not. Okay, here's another one. This one's a little tougher. Hi, John. I agree with you when you say that most spiritual practices don't work, at least not in terms of finding the truth about identity and bringing an end to useless fear and anxiety. But I'm afraid I have to disagree with you when you say that self-inquiry works for everyone, because it certainly hasn't worked for me. I have, for the last year, looked at myself, become aware of awareness, witnessed the witness, looked to see what it feels like to be here, and so on, and feel as much as ever that I am at stake in this life. Before I came across you, I spent a year and a half diligently clinging to the sense of I am, having read that as an instruction from Nisargadatta in I Am That. I've had blissful experiences, peaceful experiences, some moments of great love, and it has all convinced me that I was making some progress and that the light was finally at the end of the tunnel. Then those experiences would go away, and I'm left with emptiness, depression, and a certain amount of anger. I embarked on this journey in the hope I would be a better husband and father, less prone to fear, stress, and irritation. Well, the journey didn't work. I'm worse than ever. I'm not lighter. I'm a lot heavier. It's hard to get out of bed in the morning, and most days are a struggle against my own lack of interest in anything but my own stupid need to complete this never-ending quest, and it breaks my heart to see my family having to bear the brunt of my anger and thoughtless, self-centered, stupid behavior. I've even tried to console myself that I was going through the dark night of the soul, the storm before the calm, and so forth, but that is just wishful thinking, bullshit. And the truth of what I'm feeling is more like a spiritual midlife crisis where 20 years of effort, including self-inquiry, have resulted in nothing but dejection and disappointment. The journey is an addiction, and I'm just another junkie scraping around, trying any instruction that might get me to the next high. Where's the rehab for this? When I listen to you on the podcasts, I feel you speak with complete sincerity, as do many others like Ramana, Adyashanti, and Nisargadatta. But I get the feeling that you guys were chosen, maybe not because of goodness, but for some other reason or set of reasons, and that I'm not, and I'm never going to be, and that's it for me and thousands of others, seekers like me. We just didn't buy the right ticket in the spiritual lottery. There is no question here, really, just this rant, and I'm sorry to put this over on you. I appreciate and thank you for the great efforts you make and the simplicity of your instructions, and you help a lot of other people, and I'm happy for them. They seem like nice people. I just wish I was one of them, the lucky ones, and not me, falling back down, as always. One of the hardest things to do in this work, this person, and there's nothing he says that's unfamiliar to me. There's nothing that's said in this letter that I have not said myself at some point, some years back. The only thing that can prevent the vichara from having the effect of snuffing out their conviction that there's nothing to you but your life, that you're at stake here, that you're in danger here. The only thing that can, nothing can prevent the vichara from snuffing this out. The only thing that can get in the way is distraction, I want to find a way of saying this that doesn't carry with it like any accusation, like you're bad because you're distracted, or you're doing something that causes your distraction, or you're just not doing things right, or anything of that nature at all. Everything that we do, everything that we bring to the table when we come to the spiritual realm is conditioned and predicated and arises from this deep-seated inference. I really want you to hear that what I'm speaking of here is an inference. It's not even a belief. It's not a thought, except that all things are thought. It's an inference. It is an unexamined inference that arises from the fact that all that can ever be seen is this life. There's nothing whatsoever anywhere around. There's no possibility in any realm at all to see anything apart from this life, which is this mind, this body-mind. There is nothing else to see. Therefore, and of course when, as a incoherent and unlanguaged infant, we first happen upon human existence and its travails and its requirements, its pain, its pleasure, and so forth. When we first happen upon this, we cry out to try to get relief from pain. We find ways of of showing satisfaction with pleasure. We learn how internally to judge and to make the discernment between pain and pleasure, between satisfaction and dissatisfaction. Although even then we don't, even as we're learning it, we don't have words or anything to give shape to what we're learning. Everything we see, everything we feel is this life. And we start out blindly trying to seek pleasure and avoid pain. This is as it should be. This is a natural thing. But because of that natural behavior that is effective or ineffective in the very beginning of life, because of the fact that we can see nothing whatsoever but the sensations of the body, the thoughts that come through us, the visual images that form in the mind, theoretically as a result of interaction with light and objects and all of that, the sounds that form in the mind, this is all that we see. There's nothing to us but this life. And it is this that gives rise to that inference that there's nothing to me but this life. And that inference seems so obvious that it is not even noticed, much less brought into question. Now I say this because let me go back to this. The only thing that can prevent the vichara from having its effect, the only thing is distraction. And what I mean by distraction is the natural tendency of the personal consciousness and its instrument, attention, the natural tendency for it to rest on, look at, deal with, work with, make judgments about, form relationships with the sensations and the thoughts and the events of the mind. So that this can become very subtle. This automatic, habitual distraction, which is not something that is done, it's just something that happens. The distraction itself is like everything else in the life. It is according to the individual predispositions. It's according to the way in which the mind formed and the way in which the forces that are operating on it in this moment as we speak, as we examine these things. The distraction to the objects of thought, the distraction to the knowings and the understandings and the desires and the aspirations and the failures and the successes and what it is that constitutes success. This just goes on. It's just part of the life. It's part of the realization, the self-realization that the life is. It's part of the apparatus that supports that realization. So that as we become, especially as we become spiritually knowledgeable and spiritually sophisticated and have spiritual understanding about, and you know, I'm not speaking about clumsy or unsubtle spiritual understanding. I'm speaking about real, subtle, true spiritual understanding. As we gain these things, we have what forms within us is the same kind of inference as the inference that I am this life. The same kind of unexamined inference, which is that if this guy tells me to look at myself, what he wants me to do is to look at myself, or to become aware of awareness, or to witness the witness, or to see what it feels like to be here, and so on. But that's not what I mean. What I am asking you to do is so much less than that. I am not asking you to become aware of awareness. And one of the reasons I'm not asking you to become aware of awareness is because you are always aware of awareness, and it is the lack of the fact that we don't see that we are arises from the problem that we're trying to correct. I'm not asking you to look at yourself. I am asking you to search for yourself. I'm not asking you to witness the witness. I'm not asking you to witness anything. I am asking you to embark upon an exploration that may require great energy, that certainly will require every bit of the natural inherent intelligence that you have, and the ability to discern, to make discernment. I am asking you to embark upon this exploration, this investigation, this search for you. And sometimes I use words like look at yourself, or see if it's not true that you are already here, or I don't think I've ever said become aware of awareness, but maybe I have. And I'm pretty sure I've never told you to witness a witness, but who knows? I am asking you, I am saying those things because I have concluded in the time that I've been doing the work that those instructions tend to move your attention in more or less the right direction. What I want from this, and what I'm asking everyone to do, is to embark upon a search for yourself. Don't be dismayed and don't be distracted by the idea that you are to look at yourself, or that you are to become aware of awareness, or that you are to witness the witness, or to see what it feels like to be here. What you are to do is search for yourself with the determination to settle once and for all the question of identity, the issue of identity, which is at the heart of it all. Now, the reason I use those terms is because I don't know how else to talk about it when we're talking about it without something really useful like this email to bring out the actual details of what it is that I am trying to convey to you. So I use these terms because I just want you to start looking at yourself. Start looking for yourself. Because I know this. Here's what I know. If you embark upon this adventure, if you will try with all your heart to get for yourself the direct contact, the direct face-to-face contact between personal consciousness and its source, that effort will bear fruit. That effort, in ways that you cannot imagine and in ways that will not be reflected in the manner that you imagine that it will be because it is such a spiritual thing, that effort will bear fruit. And the fruit it will bear is the snuffing out of exactly the sense that you are at stake in this life. May not snuff out the thoughts about being at stake in this life, but it will snuff out the energetic river of fearfulness and anxiety that are caused by that conviction, that inference, the blind enslavement to that unquestioned inference. So here's the deal. When you come to the point where you are trying everything that you can possibly figure out to do, including trying to understand and trying to perform self-inquiry, or the vichara, as best that you can, and you find yourself in circumstances such as are spoken about in this really wonderful email, when you find yourself in a circumstance like that, where you are desperate and where you have exhausted everything that you can possibly do, including this that is supposed to be infallible, when you come to that point, know that in the heart of that desperation, in the heart of that hopelessness, at the very center of it is you, is this suffering personal consciousness that imagines itself to be lost in this life. At the heart of that, at the very center of it, is this suffering individual, this entity that is being left out, that did not buy the right spiritual lottery. And turn your attention there. Turn your attention to that knot of constriction and claustrophobia and hopelessness. Not, and this is the important thing, not in order to see what that is, and not in order to make that go away, although it will, in order to, because that entity, that suffering entity that cannot get free, that entity, that knot of confusion and constriction and claustrophobia and helplessness, that is the window into reality. If you bring your attention to that and hold it there steadfastly, maybe not the first time, maybe not the second time, but I guarantee you what will happen is that it will vanish, and what remains is the light of awareness, which you cannot see, but what remains is the direct personal contact with the light of reality, the light of awareness, and that, in time, will snuff out the cause of suffering and misery, will snuff out all entanglement and relationship with these ideas of having bought the wrong lottery ticket. It won't make those ideas go away necessarily, although they probably will on their own, but it'll snuff out that sickly relationship with it. It's very, very difficult to convey, and very, very difficult to communicate the actual practice of the vichara. It's impossible for me to tell you how to do this, where to look. And when I tell you where to look, it's just a kind of an approximation. But you must see for yourself what it is you're actually doing. What it is you're actually doing is searching, trying to bring your personal consciousness in direct contact with the source of personal consciousness, with you. What you are doing is searching for yourself. And as to the author of this email, if we want to talk some more, we can get together here or on the phone or something some other time too. But I'm very grateful for this email. It's not often that I get emails like this, and they are very, very useful to me, and I think they are probably very useful to everybody as well. So thank you, and I'm going to move on now. Okay, here's another one. I got... a couple more. I really... I like doing these emails because it is... when I hear from you, when I hear from you guys, and I get emails from you that about your experience with the Vichara and about your experience in life, whatever, negative or positive or good or bad, it informs me and educates me as to what needs to be said. So I'm very happy to do this with emails, and I'm also happy because... well, I'm just happy. Here's another one. My main distraction is that I have a teacher who says to, quote, leave a little space between the ego and presence, unquote. Meaning that rather than destroying the belief that you are this life, continue as this life, but be devotional toward reality. So I worry about not having a connection with God. But if any of my other relationships are indicators, I'd rather just lose the belief that there's a me and then a God than go on trying to improve that relationship. I say that, but there's still doubt. If you've anything to offer about doubts prolonging and waylaying the process, I'm open to hearing. Well, once again, the only thing that waylays and prolongs the process is distraction, and that you really don't have much to say about. The distraction comes, distraction goes, and I am certain that if you could do away with it, you would, and you can't. You'll get distracted. The important things are not the times when you spend that you spend distracted into the issues about your relationship with God and presence and so forth. Those times are just times of distraction, and which has been the way human life is normally lived. No problem. The times that count, as you are beginning to see, I can tell from this email, the time that count are the times when you are in this direct face-to-face contact with reality, with you. And I have to say that this business about issues with the relationships with presence and God and so forth are way outside the scope of my my work here, and they'll just have to unfold as they will. The only thing that interests me is to, as you can see, is to rid yourself. You know, it's not, I'm just reading this, it's not that I want you to lose the belief that there's a me. I don't care about the belief that there is a me. The me comes and goes. What I want you to lose is the inference that this me is all there is to you, and that you're at stake in what happens to this me. And that I can see from the times I've seen you in person, and from this email, that is proceeding nicely. Okay, here's another one. I am consumed by this inquiry. Although I'd heard the message before, I'd never really gotten it inside. I know you know what I mean. All day, all day, all day. There is no question now of whenever it occurs to me to just look inside. There's no choice. Two things are absolutely clear. One is that this inquiry is on, full bore. Sure, I have thoughts floating through on why the realization hasn't come and so forth. And just an aside, realization isn't going to come. It's already here. I have thoughts floating on why realization hasn't come. At times, there's a small fear that those thoughts are preventing me from waking up. But the fact that the number of thoughts is endless, and there's no chance of me stopping them, brings me around pretty good. Yeah, well, good eye. The other thing is that thought has gotten so quiet. It is still going, and I don't attempt to stop it anymore, but it's quieter when it's there. The silence grows. There's very little drama going on these days in my life. Things come and pass before I know it. It seems wrong or unnatural somehow to dig into the mind for memories to relive or reproduce or remember to talk about. Easier is to keep attention on myself. Indeed. The radio station that plays continuously also has mysteriously gone quiet or turned off at times. It's quite astonishing. Thank you for your last note to me that confirmed it meant nothing and there was nothing to be done about it. I must say this is a strange time. Is it relatively normal in this process to want very much to be alone and have a tough time relating to someone who wants to get close to me, i.e. a boyfriend, where the conversation seems so hollow and weird and I have no interest in much? The other fear I have is that with no close gurus, so to speak, that I'll get into an avoidance thing, tricked by the mind and not see it. Well, whatever occurs, however this process unfolds, is absolutely normal for you. There's no... The thing about this whole business and this whole love affair we have with the way the life looks and the way it changes and shifts and moves and so forth in response or in reaction or not to spiritual activity is a real waste of time, because it really is true that in the particular, every life at any moment is entirely unique. Entirely unique. I mean, there are certain themes about human life that are similar in all human beings, but the way in which those themes, those arising rivers of point of view play out in the particular life is entirely unique. There's a limited number of pieces and costumes and fake mustaches and so forth that we can bring to bear in making a life shape, a face for ourselves. But there's an infinite array of ways in which we can use those implements and those pieces of costume, like wanting very much to be alone or wanting very much to be with somebody. Those are two costume pieces. And in some lives it happens this way, and in other lives it happens that way, according again to the predispositions of the individual. So however this unfolds, however it unfolds, you need not attend to it. You need not attend to it as a way of seeing whether things are going well or poorly. It is there for your entertainment and for your enjoyment alone. You cannot get tricked by the mind. You have never been tricked by the mind. As far as the business of no close guru, I am not a guru, number one. And although I am not physically close to you, I am, as your friend and as your teacher, available to you pretty much any time you want me. We can talk on the phone, we can talk online, we can exchange emails, although talking is better for me. Emails take a lot of time, you know. An email ahead of time is useful to me, but talking is better for me. But here's the deal. The guru, as all agree, as every single teacher from the Buddha on agrees, the guru is you. There is no guru apart from you. So when you are playing in the all-consuming vichara, That's what you are doing. You are sitting at the feet of the Guru, which is you. You are never, ever separate from that. You are never separate from yourself. You are never absent. So this thought about not having a close Guru is foolishness. Keep doing what you're doing. You're doing so magnificently well, and I am so happy with you. Okay, one last one, and then we'll go to you guys. I tell people that to write me, so I really want to... That's the other thing about these emails. I want to be sure that that I respond to them when they write. And also I want you guys all to see that we're all pretty much the same. That the way in which we arrange the furniture and the costume pieces might be unique, but underneath it all, we're really the same. So here's the last one, a short one. Hi, John. I found you about 4 months ago, and I really resonate with what you're saying. I have been attempting to do self-inquiry, and here is my question. When I look for what I am, I see or feel this empty, peaceful awareness. So I just keep being there. Then I try to see what is looking at that, and I end up kind of in the same place, and I just stay, just being there. Is there something more I should be looking for or doing? It feels great, but I guess that's not really the purpose. I don't really get that this is what I am. I am hoping if I am on the right track, this will come. This is perfect. This is really perfect. It's perfect on so many levels and in so many ways that I don't know if I can say how perfect it is. The attempt to describe your actual experience is so obviously provisional and seen by you to be an attempt only that it's perfect that that's the case. The attempt itself describes exactly what I would expect you to experience. And it may well feel great, but your insight that that's not really the purpose is perfect. It may feel good. It may feel nothing. It may feel bad. That's not the purpose. That's incredibly perfect. Now, you say, I don't really get that this is what I am. That's not important. That really does not matter. You see, the point of the vichara, the point of the inquiry, is not to find out what you are. The point of the vichara is to come in contact with what you are. Come in face-to-face, unmediated contact with what you are, and that contact might not even be noticed. You might not even know that you're in contact with that. But it is the contact that counts. It is the face-to-face meeting with the light that counts. And what will come, because you are on the right track, is the snuffing out of the idea that something needs to come. You're already everything you want to be. Okay? Okay, that's it. That's all I have to say. That's all my correspondents have to say. I'd be happy to speak to anybody here. And so you just ask Carla, I guess.
Adrian calling from Canada.
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
I wanted to, not really to comment, but to briefly describe my reaction to one of the latest emails. It was about you know, feeling at the end of the rope and feeling desperate.
Okay.
And well, it is something that I have experienced quite a lot myself. You mentioned distractions. So the line of reasoning that I tend to have is that well, distractions are some thoughts or some feelings that make us feel bad. But I think you use this term distractions in a more subtle sense. So what I infer from some of your saying is that whether we are feeling good or bad is not important. Of course, we all want to feel good, not bad. But I wonder how we can measure the quality of this self-seeking and how we can minimize distractions. Though, on the other hand, you said that distractions are a consequence of predispositions, so in so much as they are so, they cannot really be controlled. So if you could please expand a little bit on distractions, how to prevent them, and how to view, so to speak, or how to relate to our feeling of despondency, of despair, and a feeling that, well, there are some lucky people out there, but I'm not one of them.
Well, that's two things, and I'm happy to speak about both of them. In the first place, as far as the feelings of desolation and despair, and the feeling that I'll never get it and I just missed my chance or whatever, I can only tell you that faced with that same complex of really, I guess it's kind of a violent thought and violent, aggressive victimhood, and a kind of aggressive conviction that I'll never get it, I'm doing the best I can, I haven't succeeded up till now, therefore I'll never succeed, and I'm just not one of the lucky ones. I'll tell you that myself am very intimately familiar with that complex. And it is, in fact, that very complex that drove me finally to the Vichara of Ramana Maharshi and to the only thing I could find that I really didn't have to understand to do. And that was where he encouraged his people, and this comes up often with him, where he encourages people to find ego, and I don't think he used the term ego, but to find the suffering individual, to find the suffering entity, and grab it by the throat and not let go. And this advice from Ramana, I could see, was so far away from any spiritual idea that I had ever heard, and actually seemed to give me something that I could do, that I could understand. Those two aspects of it made me grab a hold of that and decide that's what I was going to do, and I was going to, by God, find out one way or the other whether there's anything to this stuff or not anything to this stuff. And it was that aggressive and not very spiritual determination to put Ramana's teaching to the test by doing the one thing that I could do that led me to the Vichara and to its amazing consequences. As far as distractions are concerned, you're right. I do have a somewhat different take on the idea of distraction than I've heard most people, which is that distractions are just one of the articles of clothing that we put on, and that there's really nothing that needs to be done about them, so long as it's possible for you from time to time to bring attention face to face in contact with this reality, either through the direct seeking, searching for you, or through the grabbing the entity by the throat and holding on to it until it disappears. And although you will not have like a breaking open or an insight or a moment of clarity as a result of the entity disappearing, what you will do unbeknownst to you is find exposure to the light. And it doesn't take much of that before it takes hold, although it may take considerable time. There will come a time, like one of the letters I read today, someone who has finally, the Vichara has taken over, and there's nothing going on but the Vichara. Now, the other thing about distractions is that there is something that can be done. You know, there are techniques and there are practices and so forth that can be undertaken that can be useful in the vichara itself, not useful in that it makes it more effective or less effective, but useful in bringing about a kind of resilience in the mind that makes it easier for it to perform the work. And the one thing that I have recommended to people from time to time is the Buddhist mindfulness meditation. The Buddhist mindfulness meditation, in my experience, and I say it because my experience of it was that it had this effect. The Buddhist mindfulness meditation has the effect of enhancing the mind's capacity for discernment and the mind's ability to disregard distraction, to even disregard the distraction itself, not just the object that is distracting us, but to disregard even the movement of distraction and not be troubled by it. And that Buddhist mindfulness meditation is really, really simple, and it is useful, and it entails watching the breath, counting the out-breath, and when the mind is pulled away into thought or sensation or emotional feeling or anything at all, really, an itch, when the mind is pulled away, when it occurs to you that this has happened, you find that it's very easy to bring your attention back to the breath. And over time, this practice has the effect of diminishing the power of distraction to confuse you and to if you think that there's anything to it at all. Do you follow that at all?
Yes, I am. Is this technique described somewhere on your site or on some other site?
You know, I don't think it is. Let me just describe it now, because it's really very simple, okay? Here's all there is to it. And the thing about these practices is that practices of this nature are intended only to make the mind itself more resilient and less childishly involved in the things that happen as part of it. Right? It's not anything that's going to bring enlightenment or realization or awakening or any of that stuff, because none of that stuff is real anyway. You're real. The rest of it's all story. But here's how it goes. You set some time aside. It doesn't have to be a lot of time. I would say 10 or 15 minutes is good enough. More is better, but 10 or 15 minutes is good enough. And you sit down. The posture is unimportant. This is not a thing in which you have to be careful of your posture, worry about having your back straight or any of that. The only thing important about the posture is that you're comfortable enough to sit comfortably without squirming for 10 or 15 minutes. So you sit down, you get comfortable, you close your eyes, and you begin to move your attention to the sensation of the breath passing across the nostril as it comes into and goes out of the body. Just the sensation. There's no need to do anything about the breath. There's no need to make it regular or irregular. You just breathe as you breathe, and you pay attention to the sensation, not the, just the sensation, the raw, naked sensation of coolness as the breath comes in across the upper part of the nostril, and warmth as it goes out across the upper part of the nostril. And as the breath goes out, you count one, and then two, and you count to 10. You count 10 breaths, and then start over again. Now, the thing is that you can pretty much guarantee that it'll take some time before you ever get to 10. You can pretty much guarantee that the habitual way in which this life has learned to play has made it so easily distracted that it isn't going to take very many breaths before you find that you're on some train of thought that you don't remember how you got onto it or why you got onto it or what it means. And when you realize that, and you see this is also analogous to the whole thing I speak about when I speak about doing the vichara, when it occurs to you to do so, when you think about that, when you recognize that you are lost in some train of thought, you just say to yourself, thinking, and move your attention back to the breath and start over at one. Now, thinking is anything that distracts you. If you have been distracted by some itch on your leg and then follow that into some story about, you know, like, I don't know, meeting the itch or feeling the itch or where the itch came from or whether it's a physical problem or whatever, that itch is a thought. The dryness in your throat is a thought. Everything that distracts your attention is a thought. So as that happens, when you realize that you are all in thought, you just say to yourself, thinking, and gently bring your breath back to the sensation of the breath, bring your attention back to the sensation of the breath as it passes across your nostril, coming into and going out of the body, counting one for each out-breath. Now, the effect of this over time, I tell you, is to make the mind much less distractible. And by distractible, I mean even to be distracted by consternation about distraction. It is to make you much gentler with yourself, much gentler with the way the mind is, and much more familiar with its unpredictable and powerless craziness, much less concerned about it. What it will do is it'll make it much easier for you to continue the vichara. It'll make it much easier for you when it occurs to you to do so, to bring your attention searching for yourself, searching for the core of you, the heart of you, the center of you. So that's the Buddhist mindfulness meditation that I speak about from time to time, and I kind of recommend. I mean, it's not necessary, but it can make it easier. It made it easier for me, but I only knew that in retrospect. Okay?
Yes, thank you. I think I understand. Is it important or essential to reset the count, to go back to one each time the distraction arises?
Yes, you must reset the count. You must go back to one. Otherwise, you're going to have to look around in thought to try to remember where you were when you got distracted. You just go back to one. Just start over again, okay?
Okay, and so if I understand correctly, distraction is anything other than being aware of the breathing process as the air goes through our nostrils and so on.
Yes, distraction is anything other than the sensation of the breath as it passes across the nostrils. It's not any awareness of the breathing process itself. In fact, the attention on the sensation of the breath as it passes across the nostrils is not even actively understood to be connected with breath at all. Do you follow that?
I'm not sure I quite understood. I might have gone a bit distracted.
That's funny. Okay, there's the breathing process, right, which produces in-breaths and out-breaths. That's beside the point. The only reason for using the breath is because that it's always here, and it's easy to access. It doesn't take a lot of understanding to get to it. But what we're looking for is the effect of the breathing process, and not the breathing process itself, not even the fact that it's breath. What we're looking for is that sensation right on the upper tip of the nostril as the breath passes in and out, as air passes in and out across that flesh in the nostril. And the nostril is irrelevant too. It's the sensation. Anything other than that sensation is the thought. Okay? Okay.
So it's sensation experiencing versus experiencing thoughts.
Sort of, although actually the sensation itself is a thought form, but that's a whole other discussion that is really irrelevant to the process. It is the sensation, right, that sensation, any other sensation is thought and a distraction. Got that?
Yes, I think I did. And thanks a lot, John.
You're very welcome. You try it. You'll learn how to do it. It's really, really simple, and it's useful. It's helpful in the vichara. It's the only thing that I've come across that actually has some concrete value to the vichara. Okay? Anybody else? Okay, well, if there's nothing else to say, then we need not say anything else, I suppose. I really wish there was some way I could tell you all how grateful I am for your presence here, for your willingness to speak to me, to write to me, and most of all, for your willingness to undertake the vichara. It's, you know, I've... In this country, there's a great deal of excitement in this country now over this business about political change, there's something in the air about that celebrates the possibility, the sudden recognition of the possibility that really we don't have to keep doing the same things in the same way. Now, whether this pans out or not is another thing, and beside the point. The fact is that there are many, many people in this country who have, if you will forgive the expression, woken up to the fact that things really don't have to be done in the same way as they always have been done. And it's been a startling thing here. Now, I have nothing to say about the politics of it all. I, as you certainly can see yourself, you know, I mean, sure to God, we would like for this country to recover from its recent bout of insanity. But you all, I'm sure, can see for yourself that we have tried politics, we have tried religion, we have tried education, we have tried warfare, we have tried spiritual solutions, we have tried therapy, we have tried psychoanalysis, we have tried drugs, we have tried sex, we have tried rock and roll. And over 5,000 years, none of the things that we have tried have been of any use to us, really, in the end. None of the things that we have tried, including politics and including the most astonishingly, enthusiastically new ways of looking at politics, nothing we have tried has put an end to what seems to be the inherent insanity of humanity and the drive, what seems to be the drive to kill each other, maim each other, harm each other, and so forth, and really harm ourselves. So I'm not too interested in politics, but I am interested in this fresh arising just of the possibility of doing things differently, of not doing the same old thing, of finally paying attention to Einstein, who pointed out to us some years ago that to do the same thing expecting a different result is insanity. And there seems to be a whiff of that in the air in this country these days. And I'm very happy to see it. It won't in the end. I mean, things, I hope, get better and for a time. But in the end, it'll be the same old. In the end, there'll be a cycle of, there may be a cycle of relief and prosperity and goodness and so forth, which will then be devolve into the cycle of just what we've seen for the last time here. But it's that possibility, that fresh whiff of possibility that we don't have to keep doing the same thing again and again, that we really can kind of start from scratch and do things differently, look at things differently. Well, for me, this is what the vichara is. You see, the vichara, the inquiry, the investigation, the exploration, the search for self, this is not the same old spiritual mumbo-jumbo. It really isn't. It isn't the same old effort to find personal enlightenment or personal liberation or personal freedom or personal power. It really isn't. It's not the same old seeking after states of bliss and oceanic consciousness and far-seeing or any of that. It's not. Now, all those things are available to us. They're available to us at all times. All of those practices, all of those spiritual ideas, all the wonder and the really deliciousness of spiritual understanding and spiritual insight, these are all available to us all at all times. But we have taken all of these things, these practices, these relationships to gurus, these breathing techniques, these therapeutic techniques. We've taken them all and tried to make of them a way to get what cannot be gotten, which is personal enlightenment, which is personal self-realization. And we've been doing this for 5,000 years. I mean, you know, the particulars of it change as time goes on. The robes that we wear, or the meditations that we do, or the way we report on them, or our relationship to them and stuff. These things have changed over these 5,000 years. But the underlying mechanism, the underlying effort hasn't changed at all. And it hasn't done us any good, because here we are, still the same, still suffering, still at the mercy of this inference, for God's sake. Not a master, not anything but an inference, something that doesn't even hardly qualify as a thought. And nothing we've done has touched that in the least. Nothing we've done has removed from us the fearfulness that causes us to believe that we must seek enlightenment, which we don't have, in order to be free. None of it. None of it has had the slightest bit of effect on the actual root of the problem, the actual cause of all the trouble, the actual disease of this creature that is humanity. The only issue that must be settled is the issue of identity. It's all about identity. It's all about this strange, freaky relationship we have to identity. You can look in the world, you can look everywhere, and see that those who seek to sell us goods and products and services, they understand very well, although they don't, they themselves are subject to the same chains, they understand very well the power of identity to move us. When they speak to us about being what we should be, about that's not who I am, or be who all that you can be, or wear this, or look like this, or sing this, or be with these people, or act like this. This is what you want to be. This is your identity. Or sell us insurance lest our identity be stolen, which is really the most absurd thing ever. It's all about identity. Nothing that we have done in 5,000 years of spiritual practice has had the slightest effect on the underlying confusion about identity. And it's possible for us to change. It's possible for us to say, you know what? We can do this differently. We can see that the issue is identity, and if we see that the issue is identity, then the solution is immediately apparent. If the underlying issue, if the underlying cause of all the problems is identity, then that issue must be settled without regard to any of the other issues that we'd like to do something about. It's not that we don't do anything about any of those other issues, but that until the issue of identity is settled, everything we do is useless, is self-defeating, is seeking to shore up an identity that is not, it just is not. The vichara, the search for self, settles that issue. If you see that the issue is identity, then you must see that the only way to settle it, it cannot be settled by fancy theories and spiritual utterances about the nature, our nature being infinite consciousness or eternal empty awareness or our nature being anything at all or nothing. It cannot be settled by new explanations and storylines about the reality of what we are. It can be settled only in your own heart. in this moment. It can be settled only by you searching for you to settle this whole matter once and for all. Not to attain enlightenment, not to make everything turn out right, not to have experiences of bliss and overflowing and ecstasy, but just to get it settled. What am I? The only way to settle it is to look at yourself. And the only way to look at yourself is to look for yourself. I promise you, this is not like anything. There's no way that all of the other things that we know and understand and have loved so much about spiritual utterances over the age, these things have nothing to say about the vichara. Nothing. None of the things that we have come to love and cherish and want and desire in the world of human beings, none of these things have anything to say about the vichara. Nothing. It doesn't make any of that wrong or bad, any of the spiritual stuff or the material stuff or the love stuff or any of that wrong or bad, but none of this has anything to say about the settling of the issue of identity. There's nothing that you can look to within this false idea of what you are to confirm or deny the effect of the vichara. The life lives itself. It unfolds as it will, formed by its context. And when the internal context in which it is formed loses the fearfulness and anxiety that attend the conviction that there's nothing to me but this life, then the life changes. Not in any way you can anticipate. In the way it's always changed. It is formed by the context it appears in. So there's nothing in the life that you can look to that has anything to say about the vichara. There's nothing in spiritual texts or spiritual utterance or past spiritual practices that you can look to that has anything to say about the vichara or about identity. Nothing. For good or bad. Nothing that can help or hurt. First, settle this. First, have this issue of identity settled once and for all. And the good news about it is that you don't have to buy anything. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to join anything. You don't have to understand anything. You don't have to know anything except that you are. Just that, and look for yourself. And I promise you from my heart that although experiences of desolation and despair, they may or may not distract you, they cannot hurt you. Look for yourself. Search for yourself. Be 100% determined to settle the issue of identity. That's all. There's nothing more to it than that. So please stay in touch. Please let me know how you're doing. Once the vichara reveals itself, it's obvious. Until it does, it is impenetrable. And I understand that. I understand that from my own experience. So please don't ever hesitate to come to me with anything that troubles you, with anything that you think I might be helpful with. And I will try my best to be of help to you. I want nothing in this life but that this entire creature that we are, this humanity that we are, settle throughout its entirety the issue of identity. And see what happens then. See what shape this creature takes on then. So be well. Enjoy yourself. Above all things, enjoy yourself. I love you all. Carla has a couple things to say, but I'm going to go now. Thank you so much for being here.